accession number 28673, which is a dominant chart, reel 5. Now we're just looking at aerobatics and flying training tricks and this and that. Anything else you recall? There's things like barrel roll. Is the barrel roll just a
yes.
slow roll?
Yes, a barrel roll is a slow roll, but you go like a barrel, in other words, you don't, I mean, the object of a good slow roll is to turn on your axis. But with a barrel roll, it goes like that. And all it does is you adjust your control column and your rudders and everything to barrel like that. The other thing you can do, which isn't easy, is what they call a flick roll.
Flick roll?
Mm.
And how do you do that?
Well, that you do that by building up a hell of a lot of speed. You've got to be flying very fast.
Can you do it in a mild magister then?
No.
Ah, right.
No. I was never told that, but you could do it in a Spitfire.
What
you've got to do is you get a hell of a lot of speed up as you can, and as you're flying along, you kick your rudder like that, if you want to flick, and you'll flick over. But you've got to do it very quickly and very definitely, otherwise you'll just go like that. And it'll do that. But if you go to air shows, you'll see they do a lot of flick rolls.
Anything else you were learning, or any other aerobatics?
I'm just trying to think. I've told about the loops and rolls and rolls off the top. No, I think those are the basic aerobatics. I mean, people will do all sorts of funny things trying to do it the proper way.
Were you told not to do them at a low level? I mean,
because
there's been a big, it's always a thing in the RAF. Mm-hmm. I mean, Barter and people like that had got into trouble doing low.
Yeah.
Were you not allowed to do them low?
You weren't allowed to do aerobatics. Well, in a magister, you weren't allowed to do it below about at least 2,000 feet. But we had a thing called, we had to learn to low fly. That was another thing we had to learn.
They had
all the airfields in the country had low flying areas, which were it was the area that you could go low flying. And in theory, you shouldn't have been flying less than 300 feet. But people did. Because, let's be honest about it, the real thrill of speed and getting the thrill of speed when you're flying is when you're flying low, because you don't get it when you're high. So people used to get in all sorts of trouble low flying, and they still do.
Now, what height would you fly then?
What do you mean? When I was
when you were
officially
low,
300 feet.
But unofficially?
Lower than that.
How much lower?
Well, we used to get down almost down to the ground. Well, I mean, in a Maggie, you could do that because you weren't doing any speed. You could fly along and go between trees and things, you know, but you weren't.
So 50 feet and lower?
Yeah.
Now, that can lead to accidents.
Yes, and did. In fact, the majority of accidents in the more advanced training in the RAF were being low flying. When I went to operational training on hurricanes, the CO said when we got there, he said...
I'll come back to that.
Okay.
One thing about this 300 of it is what I'm wondering, I mean, what I'm wondering about that is at 300 feet, unless you ran into a rather tall cathedral spire...
You're not going to hit anything. There. No, that's right. And, of course, you're also supposed to fly at that height and speed with flaps down. In other words, you've got a bit more lift. But I mean, the thrill of low flying is flying fast and low. In fact, you know, a friend of mine got to reduce to the ranks for flying under the Severn Bridge.
When was that? Later.
Yeah.
Now, what else were you doing? Anything else you're doing at Mere?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. Well, we did. Of course, we had to do navigation.
Now, how's navigation developing? I mean, it had been dead reckoning before.
It was still dead reckoning. In fact, all through my flying training was dead reckoning.
Well, were you doing cross-country training navigation?
Yes.
This is A to B, you know,
yeah.
Stoke.
Oh, yes. Well, on the course, you know, there would be a couple of cross-countries. And the first one would be a probably a three-leg, you know, like a triangle, if you like, from from Stoke to Burton-on-Trent and up to Lincoln back again. But
did you use dead reckoning, or did you just look? You can follow the railways or the canals to both those.
Very good question.
Which did you do?
I think most of us, and I'd be no different, would try to do it dead reckoning, but in the back of your mind, you're just map reading, to be honest. In fact, railway lines were a good thing to follow. But then one of the cross countries would have been to another airfield where you had to land, one, and you didn't know where you had to land, book in, refuel and come back. I can't remember which one it was from here, but it would be one that wouldn't be that far away. You just sort of land, and so that they knew that you could land in a strange airfield, I suppose, and that you could find it and get back again.
In other words, so you weren't just completely used to landing on one airfield and the one
that's
grass
right.
type,
yeah.
It was grass. So that you were just getting used to landing in a slightly different...
That's right.
And what else were you up to? Cross-country flights? No firing?
We hadn't got round to having guns or anything in those.
Anything else?
I'm just trying to think. I think that was just about it, really.
Now, what would you do in your... you've got ground training, morning, flying...
Afternoon,
flying,
or the other way, yeah.
What would you do if you weren't doing that?
What, you mean if the weather was bad?
Generally, if there were any other duties or anything else you had to do.
Oh, no. We, as pupils, we didn't have to do any airfield duties. We didn't have to go on guard duties or anything like that. We just did the course. And as I said to you, in this particular airfield at Mere, there was the only other... RAF people were, apart from us pupils, were the instructors. All the rest were civilians.
What would you do for amusement in the evening? I presume you were allowed out.
Yeah. Well, at this particular time when I was there, pubs were, it were difficult to find a pub that had any beer in it. But we used to find some occasionally, and we used to go to the local hop. Now, this was something in up there because all the local boys had gone off to the war. And I said to you, the only uniformed people up there were the pupils and the instructors. And, of course, as you can imagine, at the local hops, we were in great demand with the girls. And you've got quite a lot of nice girls up around Stoke-on-Trent. The only trouble was they all looked very pale because they'd never seen much of the sun in those days. Or they didn't, they would now, of course. But and we used to go to. You remember I said to you, you'd have a thing called a ladies' excuse me. Well, when that was on, you'd be dancing with somebody, and in the middle there would be a gang of women all queued up there, looking and pouncing. I wasn't complaining because. Bearing in mind that I was single and unattached then, and so I did enjoy that, I must admit. So we were in great demand.
Were they dance halls, or were they village dance?
Mostly village dance halls, yeah. Mm.
And what about the pubs? So not much beer?
No. I can remember we used to sort of have to do a circular tour at times to try and find a pint of beer, because the pubs used to get... an allocation of beer, and they used to sell out in about an hour, so you had to find one that had just opened, that we used to manage. But we did have we didn't have it because I wasn't a sergeant by this time. I was just a leading air craftsman, so we didn't have a mess, but we had a naffy there.
Tell me about the canteen. What did that offer? What was in there for you?
Well, not a lot, really. You just went in there and you queued up with your irons, and you they dished out your food, and when you got to the end of that, you went and sat down and ate it. We did have a naffy, so you could go and sit and buy a naffy cake and a beer if they had it, and a coffee and stuff like
any
that.
Any games, darts or billiards?
Yes,
or
yes. We used to play darts particularly, I think, because, you know, most pubs got darts, haven't they? Billiards, most RAF stations, of course, had, and if you're in the sergeant's mess or the officer's mess, they've all got billiard room. But this was a bit different up there because it wasn't like an RAF station, really.
Now, how did you pass out? Did you all pass out together? What happened? What was the end result of your time there?
Yeah, well, at the end, we got to the station. Well, I think perhaps I left a week early, which I'll tell you about probably next time because it's a little bit on the sort of complicated side. But I had to go off to because I'd done a lot more hours than anybody else. I went and did some night flying on Tiger Moss.
Now, where did you do that from?
A place called Kingston, which is near Carlisle. I'll go back a bit because what happened was that as we got of my 6 weeks course, I had done 5 weeks. And I had done a lot more flying than most people on the course. And I think they got a signal through or got the thing from headquarters that they wanted to try, this is an experiment, to try and put pupils who were in their elementary flying doing night flying. Because normally we didn't do any night flying until you got more advanced, you see. Now, this, I think, was because the night fighter units were beginning to be built up. And, of course, the bombers were coming at night, so there was going to be a lot more night flying. And I think they wanted to see how pupils who hadn't a lot of experience would react flying at night with very limited, no radio and limited control things on the in the airplane. So what I was called into the CO's office, and he said to me, look, I'm sorry, but we're sending you off to this place to do some night flying. And he said, you've got more. There was another, about two or three other chaps had got a lot, almost as many as me. And he said, but we've got to get you up to your full complement of hours before we can move you from here. And that was the 50 hours, you see. So he said, you're going to have to do a lot of flying. So I had to do an intensive few days of flying all the time to get my hours up so that I could go on this course. And eventually I did. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it would be. And so I went up to this place near Carlisle where they had Tiger Moss there. And first thing, of course, I had to learn to fly a Tiger Moss, bearing in mind the only airplane I'd ever flown was a Miles Maggie. So I had to learn that. And then I had to
What did you think of the Tiger Moss? I mean, how did the Tiger Moss compare? It's a very popular aircraft among some people. What did you think of it?
Lovely airplane, lovely.
What was so nice about it? And how did it compare to the Magister?
Well, I thought the Magister was almost as good. Well, it was as good. But, you see, it didn't have the magic flaps for a start. Because the Maggie was a low-wing monoplane. But Tiger Moth was a biplane, as you probably know. And it had no flaps, no brakes, because your tail swing would slow you up. But it was an aeroplane that would virtually fly itself, to be honest. So it was a lovely aeroplane. And of course, it was an open cockpit. It was a lovely aeroplane, but it wasn't as fast as the Magister. So probably if you'd said to me at the end of that course, which aeroplane do you like, I'd have said the Magister. For that reason, I think, because it was a bit more modern, I suppose.
Now, tell me about the night flying. How did they train you in night flying?
Purely by experience.
They didn't put you up with an instructor first?
Yes. The first thing I did, bear in mind, there's only a week's course I was on. I had to learn to fly a Tiger Moss, which is easy if you had any sort of thing. Then we had to fly at night. Well, the first thing, of course, was that you would go with the instructor and he would teach you all the elements of night flying.
What are the elements? What do you have to learn to fly night?
Well, basically, to learn to fly without seeing where you're going. Now, that might sound funny, but it is a fact. Unless you have got a very bright moonlight night, you see, you can't. And the thing is, you've got to learn to rely on your instruments. And that's what people don't do sometimes. If you're flying along in an airplane in the dark and you've got no horizon or anything, you can quite easily think you're flying in a different attitude than you are. You know, it's one of those things, you might think you're upside down. But you've got to learn to concentrate on those instruments. Now, I had this brought home to me very early because the instructor said to me, right, what you just did a circuit to start with. You climb up to 500 feet, crosswind, downwind, and then crosswind again and land. And to bearing in mind, we had no flare, we had no runway lights. This was during the war, and we had those flares in a T, which you couldn't always see very well. So he said to me, my instructor drilled it into me. He said, when you're flying downwind, you've got to say, instruments, flare path. Instruments, flare path. Move your head from one. Keep watching both. And so when I was flying on my first solo, coming downwind, I thought, right, I must remember that. Instruments, flare path. Instruments, flare path. And I got to a stage when I looked back at the flare path, it wasn't there. So I panicked a bit and I put the stick over and I got myself in a bit of a knickers twisted. But eventually I saw him and I said, I think I'm lucky. I'm one of these people that can calm myself down if things go wrong, you know. And I said, hang on. And I got my instruments sorted out and then I found my flare path. So that was all right. But that was a lesson. And we had a thing called a glide path indicator.
Now what's that?
Right. Well, as you came in to the... Well, not the runway, because we'd have runways, the strip, if you like, where the flares were. You're straight. You've got a thing at the end, which, if it's got a glide path indicator. If you're too high, it shows yellow. If you're on your proper glide path, it will show green. And if you're too low, it will show red. It's because there's a light behind it, and they've got these things at an angle, you know. So, in other words, when you were coming into land, you had to make sure that you could see the green all the time. In fact, a friend of mine suddenly discovered that despite all those terrible medical things, that he was colourblind. But he didn't tell them because they'd chuck him straight off the course. So he had problems. But that was the glide path indicator and the flares. That's all we had. We had no radio or anything.
And anything else? But I know it's only a short course.
Mm.
But anything else?
No, we had to do so many circuits and landings. We didn't do any cross countries or anything. It was purely to get us... I think really it was an experiment to see if we were able to fly at night in those situations, you know, which it turned out that we could. But I have to admit that I have never really enjoyed night flying. I don't really like driving at night, to be honest.
Why? Just the obvious, you can't see. I mean, is that it?
I think that, and once again, I think I suffer from something that the opticians glare, you know. I think that I probably suffer. I've got perfectly good sight, but I get this when I'm driving at night. If I get lights coming at me, I suffer with the glare more than most people, I think. And I think, I don't know, they've never told me this, but I have read about this as a condition, a sight condition that some people have got. And, of course, I was lucky because I didn't have to do much night flying because I was on a day fighter squadron, so we only flew mostly during the day.
Now, what happened after this course, then, at Kingston? Did you go back to rejoin them at Mir, or did you get your posting from there?
No, posting went from there. We went on leave because I'd reached the end. and they gave me a posting which I didn't really want, which was a bit complicated. You want me to do that next time?
Carry on, might as well start. Oh,
right. Well, I had been recommended all the way through to go on to single seaters.
Now, why were you recommended for that?
Well, you'd have to ask them, I don't know, but I suspect it was because, A, I was young, B, I probably was quite good at aerobatics, I think. Secondly, that I'd got this absolute desire to fly a fighter airplane. I don't know, but at the end of EFTS, which is, but at the end there, your instructor was the one that gave you recommendations, and he recommended that I go on to single engine fighters, which unfortunately, when it came to getting my posting for my advanced flying, this is when the business had come in about, this is when the night fighters were coming in, you know, the twin engine, the Mosquito, not Mosquitoes, the Bow Fighters. And I think the air ministry were looking for a lot of pilots to do that. Probably people who were temperamentally fighter pilots, but could fly twin engine aeroplanes at the same time. So I got sent to an FTS that was flying twins, Airspeed Oxfords, I wasn't very happy about, to be honest.
Where was this at?
That was at Kidlington, a place called Kidlington, which is near Oxford.
Now, do you know the number of the... Oh, you won't, but we'll...
No, I'll look these up for you before next time.
And this was an advanced flying training school?
Mm. Well, it's called FTS, Flying Training School. It was the... where you learned all the more of the advanced flying, yes.
And you were training on the Oxford?
Yeah.
Now, how did they start you off on that?
Exactly the same as all the others, you know. The instructor took you up on a first flight familiarisation, if you like, and showed you how to fly it and what to do.
What did you think of the Oxford? Because it's not a well-known aircraft at all. Could you just describe what it was like to fly and what you thought of it?
I wasn't all that keen on the fact that it was a twin-engine aeroplane, because I didn't really want to do that. But anyway, they sorted me out later. That was all right. But it was a nice aeroplane. It had no vices. You know, it was a good training aeroplane for twin engines. I've got nothing but praise for it. They used to build it down here at Portsmouth, of course, Airspeed. Mm.
So what happened there? How does your training progress?
Well, I went through this FTS course. And
what was the course? What were they doing?
Almost exactly the same as we've been doing in before. You know, you had to learn to take off and landing. You have to do circuits and bumps. You have to do cross countries. You have to do. We were doing night flying then. Of course, that was part of the course.
And this was what month would this be? August to. I'm going to lose too much track of work. Or is it September by now?
Yeah, it was. I'm trying to think. I finished the course in early December, so it must have been, because it's a longer course. It was a 10-week course, I think.
So, September-ish.
Yeah. And then there's quite a lot of night flying in advanced FTS.
Now, how did you do with that? Because you had trouble with it. You didn't like it.
No.
How did you do with it?
I did all right, I think. I didn't like it. Just one of those things. I never really enjoyed night flying.
So what type of things were you doing in the night flying part of the course?
Well, mostly circuits and bumps. So we didn't do any long any cross countries, because I suppose it was too flipping dangerous, because it was blackouts. You wouldn't know where the hell you were, and as pupils, we don't forget, we were still pupils at this stage, and. It was, I had a bit of an unfortunate experience on one of my night flying nights. Quite a good friend of mine got killed, you know, he panicked.
What was the circumstance of that?
Well, I think he panicked. He was taking off, and it was dark, and you didn't know where you were, and you had to follow your instruments. You at all times rely on your instruments. And he was taking off, and he suddenly stalled and dived into the ground. I suspect because he probably panicked and wasn't watching his instruments and wasn't listening to or watching them, and being they should have been, what's the word I want? He wasn't relying on them, which you should do. You've got to. And I learnt that, of course, at a very early age. But I think that's what happened. So I got I was quite upset about that because I actually saw him killed, and that the thing went up in flames, which doesn't help anybody. But there, that's what
Is that
war is
what you
about.
want at all?
No, it didn't put me off flying, and it could have put me off night flying, but then I was off night flying anyway. But I won't say I was off. I did it, and I would do it, and there was no problem, but I didn't like it.
Were you learning any sort of fighter tactics or two-seater fighter tactics while you were there?
No, no.
So it was just learning to
It,
fly, right?
learning to fly, and that if I had gone on to a single engine, it would have probably been a Miles Master or Harvard, and all you were learning then was to fly the aeroplane. We didn't learn anything about fighting until you got to OTU, operational training.
So this was still really just flying, another
Yes.
stage of learning to fly.
Yes.
Anything else you remember from this course?
Yeah, funny little things that you remember. When you, if you stalled an engine, bearing in mind there's a twin engine one, the only way you could start it was by putting the handle in and winding the handle. And we were told that if when you landed you were taxiing in, you lost an engine, if it stopped, under no circumstances were you to try and start it again. You had to wait there until somebody came out and sorted you out. Don't forget, we're still pupils at this stage. And one silly fool came in and did exactly that. He landed, he lost a prop and looked around. There wasn't anybody about, so he thought he'd just nip out on the wing with his handle and start it. So what he did was what you'd expect. Open the throttle quite a bit, got out and twisted the handle, and the thing roared into life, and the wind speed blew him off the wing under the ground, and this airspeed Oxford, I can always remember it, was going round in a circle in the middle of the airfield, and of course they got the crash a lot out, and also the CO, that was the chief instructor, came out in his car and stopped there, and he bollocked this lad, as you can imagine, and he said, I can always remember his comment, "How much fuel has it got?" Because it was going around in a circle. But luckily there was one of the airmen there was quite brave really, I suppose, and quite agile. He ran round. He started to run, and he edged his the trailing edge of the wing, going at speed. And he jumped, and he actually got on the wing and held on, and he pulled himself up the wing, and he was able to get in the cockpit and switch the engine off.